Welcome to episode 221 of the Ski Podcast, and thanks for joining us, listener. Today we have a packed episode. We're going to be finding out about skiing in Scandinavia, what it's like coaching your kids to be pro skiers, plus we're going to find out more about the European Sleeper Service, a train that's going to go to Innsbruck and the Dolomites this winter, and a report on my trip to Crans-Montana. Now, my name is Ian Martin, and I'd like to introduce my guest today. I'm delighted to welcome Emma Carrick-Anderson for her first time on the show. Regular listeners might recall I interviewed her son, Zach, in episode 200, and we'll be hearing from him and his brothers later on. Hi, Emma. How are you?
I'm very well. Thanks, Ian. How are yourself?
I'm good. You have a beautiful view behind you. Where are you right now?
I do. Do you know what? It's one of those absolute bluebird days. I mean, I don't know if you can see behind me, but we've had a sprinkling of snow overnight, about 5-10 centimetres. We're training GS today, the sun's out, and the view is insane. In fact, if I turn it around, I don't know, you could maybe see a little bit more behind me.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. I can see it. The listeners will have to take my word for it. It looks absolutely beautiful. And you're on the glacier in Saas Fee right now.
I am. I'm in Saas Fee. Yeah, the glacier is in incredible condition. It's better than it's been for the last few years, which is great. They got quite a lot of snow about a week ago, just before we arrived. We arrived just in time for it to pack down, and now it's just stunning.
Also joining us for the first time, I'm delighted to welcome Ben Nyberg, Managing Director at Ski Scandinavia. Hi, Ben, how are you?
Hi, and very good, thank you.
And where are you today?
I'm actually in Sweden, on the west coast, close to Gothenburg, but I'm only sort of 2 hours from Oslo, 4 hours from the slopes, where I like to spend most of my time in the winter.
Yeah. Well, 4 hours from the slopes sounds like a great location to be. I'm pretty sure most of our listeners would like that. Emma, normally I ask my guests when you last skied or snowboarded, but you probably are on your skis right now on snow in Saas Fee. So I'm guessing it was like a couple of minutes ago.
Yeah, absolutely. I've literally just jumped off the lift and come to find a little quiet place on the mountain to have a chat with you, Ian. There's not much time in the summer or the winter that we're not on skis, to be honest.
What about yourself, Ben? When did you last ski or snowboard?
So the last time I skied was actually just after Easter, in a resort called Stutten, which is close to the Scandinavian Mountains Airport, about 20 minutes away. It was amazing. The snow conditions were fantastic. We were popping off piste into a bit of fresh powder, but it was just the feeling of just being at home. It's the only way I can describe it. It's a really strange feeling in the resort. It's like a home resort. When you get there, you feel like you're coming home. Just the atmosphere, the people, it was incredible. Absolutely loved it.
So if you're starting to plan your skiing for this winter, then I'm delighted to confirm that Intersport are sponsoring the Ski Podcast for a second winter. That means all podcast listeners can save money on your ski hire by using the code SKIPODCAST at intersportrent.com, or simply take the link in the show notes for your discount to be automatically applied at the checkout. Now, news. I was at an event called Ski Launch last week. It's an industry event, and I organized the forum for that. Our keynote speaker was Mike Gore. Regular listeners will have already heard him on the podcast in episode 204. That was really interesting to hear him talking about Vail Resort's expansion plans in Europe. We also had sessions about sustainability, where I was joined by our equipment guru, Al Morgan, and you'll be able to hear his views on the new season's kit when our equipment episodes start next week. That will be with the best new skis of 24-25 first up. Now, at Ski Launch, I also led a session talking to Vicky Gosling, CEO of GB Snowsport. There's no recording of that, but I did interview her earlier this summer as part of my Women in Snowsport series. And you can look out for that conversation going live in a couple of weeks' time. Like Chemi Alcott, she has so much energy. She is very dynamic, and she is very positive about Milan Cortina, the next Winter Olympics in 2026. Now, the start of that qualification period is underway now. It started really well for Mia Brooks, who Vicky flagged is probably one of our best chances of a medal. And she took a second in the snowboard slope style in Cardrona. Now, in the news section in episode 219, I mentioned a new overnight train service that will connect from Austria and the Dolomites, called the European Sleeper. Regular listeners will know I love train travel, and I'm very keen to try that service out, especially as it opens up the Dolomites for train travel for the first time. So I tracked down and spoke to the founder, Chris Engelsman, to find out more about that service. I'm delighted to be joined today by Chris Engelsman, co-founder of European Sleeper. Hi, Chris. How are you today?
Very well, thank you. I'm also happy to join.
Excellent. And whereabouts are you?
I'm currently in the European Sleeper headquarters in Utrecht. This is our office.
Excellent. Well, I've been following European Sleeper since you launched. I've mentioned it before on the podcast. It's possible to take a night train over to Berlin, and subsequently that's extended to Prague. And there's a real interest in my position with Ski Flight Free. I'm always trying to help people understand different ways of being able to get to the Alps and get to ski resorts that doesn't involve flying. And night trains are becoming more and more important part of that. You've got the OBB service, Nightjet. But what's really exciting about European Sleeper is a route that's going to be going to Venice and will go through the Alps. And we'll come on to that. But I wondered if I could start by asking you when European Sleeper started.
Yes, the idea started around 2020 when we, my co-founder and me, we found out that there are so many, a few night trains, and there's also huge opportunities. So then the idea started to operate a night train ourselves. It's quite exciting to do this as let's say to individuals, to night train fans. We are funded by the community. There's a huge support from the night train community to restart night trains, to be able to travel in night trains.
Excellent. And so you started off with that Berlin route, which you subsequently extended to Prague. But what's really interesting, as I mentioned before, is this new route that you're going to be starting to Venice. And to give an idea, well, maybe you should explain the route for our listeners.
Yeah, this idea, it comes from the traditional Alp Express for ski purposes, and we give it a little bit of another twist with the route. So we start in Brussels instead of Amsterdam, because we really believe in the Belgium, but especially also the UK market for this. And so with one change with the Eurostar to Brussels, it's accessible for UK travelers relatively easy. And we also decided to extend it not only, first of all, to Südtirol, where there's skiing opportunities which are usually not covered by night trains. So that's Bolzano and a few other resorts. And we combine this with an interesting winter destination, namely Italy, Verona, and Venice, of course. It's a nice mix of destinations.
For British customers, and you know, most of the listeners to the podcast are from the UK, although you know, around 40% or so are from all over the world, what's going to happen is you'd be able to take the Eurostar from London to Brussels, then you segue onto the European Sleeper. It's going to take you up round, down through through Holland, down through Germany, into Austria, stop in Innsbruck on the way. So obviously you can access so many different resorts from Innsbruck. And then, as you mentioned, going through to the Südtirol, Bolzano is about an hour and a half from the Dolomites. And to me, that's really interesting, because getting to the Dolomites, although I've taken the train to Switzerland and France and Austria before, getting to the Dolomites has always been really difficult by train. I wondered if you could just give an insight into the timings. How would it work? You're obviously leaving in the evening. What sort of times would you arrive into Innsbruck and Bolzano?
Yeah, we have the preliminary timetable. We are going to publish it on the website soon, starting the ticket sales as well. And this has to be finalized, so it could be changed, like, say, half an hour or a little bit more. But basically, these are the times, which means leaving from Brussels around 7 o'clock. If I'm not mistaken, that would imply taking the Eurostar from London at 3. And then traveling through Belgium, Netherlands, Western Germany, I think 11:30 from Cologne. And then the next morning, there's a few ski resorts around 8, 9 o'clock in Austria. And then I would say 10:30 in Bolzano, something like that.
Excellent. So, you know, that can fit in really well with skiing. And it's not going to be a daily service or run all winter, is it? Have you got the dates and days of operation confirmed yet?
Yes, we will run 7 times up and down to Innsbruck in February and March. Try to do 2 extra trips end of March, but we need some more coaches for that. So we're discussing with the rental companies. They may go ahead. And this is actually the first year we start. So we would run the service the whole winter, let's say from half December in the next season. And it mainly has to do with we need an Italian operator that is reliable, and they need some more time to set this up. So this time, and that's actually good for a pilot for a start, because it's the high season, really, right? So February is the high season for the skiing and the holidays.
For sure. So you're saying in this first season experimentation, there's going to be, let's say, 7 to 10 rotations, yes. But you're hoping to introduce more in the future. Do you know what days of the week they're going to be operating?
In the school holidays, we will be running Friday and Saturday up and down, and one return trip during the week. Outside the holiday periods, we would run, that would be sort of a short skiing trip, the Wednesdays towards the Alps, and the return trip on Sunday evening. Yeah.
Yeah, that fits in really well around people's holiday times. What about the costs? Are those confirmed yet?
Not finalized yet. We consider a one-way trip between 150 euros in a couchette and up to 250 euros in the most busy days.
And when do you think tickets will go on sale then? When are you going to confirm the timings and prices?
Yeah, the planning now is to start ticket sales on the 24th of September.
Well, we're actually speaking in early September. I'll quickly check my schedule. Yes, I'm planning to publish this episode on the 20th of September. So, listener, you'll be able to go straight from this, favorite the European Sleeper website, and then pick up a ticket for yourself when they go on sale. That's brilliant, Chris. I'd like to thank you for two reasons. Firstly, for joining me today, but secondly, for innovating like this and bringing new products like this to the market, because I think it's really important for several reasons. I genuinely believe there's demand out there, and there just isn't enough product to satisfy that demand. So I really hope that it's going to be successful and we find out that you're running much more rotations next year. Thank you so much.
My pleasure.
So that's exciting. I'm in the early stages of planning a trip to Val Gardena in March, and you can be sure I will definitely report back on that here. I've been out by train to the Alps since our last episode. Last week, I took the train to Crans-Montana in Switzerland. Now, that is a very easy resort to get to by train. It's a straightforward London, Paris, Geneva, then 2 hours to Sierre, and then it's actually a 12-minute funicular, which takes you directly up into the resort. And once you get into resort, there's a free bus service, and unsurprisingly, I guess, for the Swiss, they all perfectly segue to each other. So you get off the top of the funicular, and then 2 minutes later, there's a bus that will take you on to the next spot. Now, I've put a video about that journey on the Skipedia YouTube channel, and I've written up the journey on Ski Flight Free, so you can find links to that in the show notes. I was in Crans-Montana to take part in the Wildstrubel UTMB race. That's a ultra running race. There's five different races going on. I took part in the 72-kilometer race, and I'm writing that one up for Ultra Runner magazine. But this is a ski podcast, so I'm not going to go into that in any detail, but I'll put a link to the video in the show notes. What I will do is just give you now a little taste of the Swiss Alps with this clip I recorded of some of the locals. The most relevant aspect for you, listener, is that there was a lot of early snow on the mountains. In fact, all of the race routes were changed so that they avoided the higher passes. But I was still running through 30 centimetres of snow at about 2,200 metres. Now, we all know September snow doesn't tend to stick around, but it's still very exciting to see the hills white again. Crans-Montana has a lot going on just now. Their acquisition by Vail Resorts went through in May, and there's a lot of major events coming to the resort. So I spoke to Pierre-Henri Manetti from the tourist office to get a recap.
I'm sitting here right now with Pierre-Henri Manetti from the Crans-Montana Tourist Board, and we're right in the middle of the village for the athletes at the Wildstrubel UTMB. I did the 70K race yesterday. I'm feeling a little tender today, but thanks so much for putting this on. It's an amazing competition, and it's one of many that are going on in Crans-Montana, because let's start with skiing. This winter you've got a men's downhill here, right?
Yes, correct, yeah. Men's downhill in next winter,
which is going to be a big event because it's the first time the men skiers from the tour are coming back to Tramontana. It's a big, big event for us. It's a big rendezvous, I would say.
Yeah, and they're going to start from Belle Louis and then they'll cut across and get onto the
National and then all the way down to Barzette.
Yeah, okay.
Barzette is where we have the stadium, the arrival stadium.
Yeah. And that actually will be a precursor of the following year. We're going to have a women's race and a men's race.
Exactly. This will be the rehearsal of 2027 for us, having the men's and the ladies.
And in 2027 is the World Championships, exactly, which are going to be hosted here.
Right.
So there's a lot going on in winter.
Yes.
And we haven't even touched on the fact that Vail Resorts now own Cromontana as well. But there are other big events going on. In September, a couple of weeks ago, you had a big golf event here,
yes,
right?
This is the Omega Masters. It's been here for many, many years. It's one of the most important events of Switzerland.
And so next year, it's going to be particularly busy here in September because you've got the golf tournament ahead. Then we'll have, this event going on again where we have four or five different races. I don't know how many people are competing, but I would guess about 3,000 or something like that.
Here?
Yeah.
6,000.
6,000 people competing in all of the different races.
Yeah.
And I might as well chip in. We've got quite a bit of snow on the mountain as well.
Yeah.
I was up there yesterday, probably 30 centimetres higher up. But then next year, on top of that, you've got the Mountain Bike World Championships, right?
Yes, from the 10th to the 14th of September, UCI Mountain Bike World Series. It's another great event. We had this one this year already in June. That was amazing for us, a big, big event. First time we organized such event here. I think it was a real success.
Yeah, and is that take on, say, that type of event? Is that downhill and, cross-country? Are those the disciplines?
No, we're doing the cross-country only here.
Yep.
We will have in 2025. We only have the cross country.
Yeah, I mean the trails are amazing. I went for a hike. I obviously ran around the place yesterday, but before that we went up. A lot of mountain bikers up there. In winter, you've got a really good ski touring network here.
One of the largest one in this region of the world.
Yeah, and my wife is up walking today, and there's so many trails. You've got different maps for all of them. Clearly, by the end of the Mountain Bike World Championships, you'll probably need a holiday.
Yeah, well, it's busy year-round, so we'd have to keep on working. I mean, this event are coming up. It's organized by other people, different teams.
It's certainly going to be very interesting, following all of that, all the different events you're doing, and seeing in the first winter of operating with Vail Resorts as well, what kind of a difference that's going to make. That's brilliant, Pierre-Henri. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much.
Right, I'd like to come back to you, Emma, if that's okay. Listeners will recognise your surname, I guess, for several reasons. I mean, I mentioned before I interviewed your son, Zach, earlier this year, and you have three boys all racing Europa Cup this winter. Now, you're out there right now because you're their coach, right?
I am. I'm one of their coaches, yeah, along with my husband and their dad, Phil Smith. Yeah, we've actually coached the boys since they were really young, probably since they were sort of 7 or 8. Obviously, at that time, it was just a lot of fun. It's still a lot of fun, but it changes as you get older. It gets a little bit more serious. But we've been really lucky to have been able to take this journey so far. And it is quite some journey we're on.
For sure. And on your camp there in Sasfay, it's not just your boys. You've got a couple of other racers with you as well.
Yes, we work very closely with the Butler family as well. So Molly and Matty Butler. Matty's a little bit younger. He's just coming into FIST, but Molly is also coming into the Europa Cup season, her first season. And she has trained with us as well as Matty since they were 7 or 8 as well. So we're kind of two families that work very closely together. It becomes a little bit more complicated now as we move into the next stage, into the Europa Cup circuit. That definitely throws a few more challenges at us. It's not impossible, but we certainly will be looking at having to bring some more people in the near future.
The logistics must already be super complicated because I mentioned you've got three boys, so Zach and Freddie are your twins, and then Luca also on the Europa Cup circuit, all racing and training in different places, as we'll find out. But I wondered if I could just take you back slightly, because some of our listeners will be aware that you were a top level racer yourself, and you took part in four Olympic Games. So you had three top 20 results there. How did you get into racing?
Wow. Well, I started skiing, luckily, when I was two, up in the Cairngorms. My family were very into skiing, so I was quite lucky. I got thrown in then, and I just loved it. I remember being about 6 years old and watching David Vine on Ski Sunday, commentating and presenting, and then watching all the races. And I thought, that's what I want to do. And I was lucky to follow my dreams. I went to school in Austria, then was at my first Olympics when I was 16. So I guess you could say it's very much in the blood. And although we didn't intentionally, I think, create three ski racers, you know, maybe there was a little bit of that magic in there right from the beginning. And those seeds were planted when they were young, and they love it, which is great.
Yeah, well, I was going to come back to the boys, but let's just think about the Olympics. I kind of forgotten, or I missed, that you were only 16, because those first Olympics were Albertville, right?
Yes, they were. They were Albertville. Yeah, I was just 16, so I was just going there for a blast.
But you got some brilliant results there, right?
Yeah, I did. I did. I guess I had no expectations, and that was really nice. When you haven't got the expectations, you ski very freely. And then as you get older, you know, you put more pressure on yourself, and you maybe feel more pressure from around about you. And I think nowadays there's more awareness of that. I know that we're certainly bringing in people to help the boys to make sure that as they go through their careers, they hopefully can stay away from feeling that so much of the pressure, or if they do feel it, at least having the tools to deal with it. It's such an important part of it. You know, the mental game of ski racing is massive.
For sure. I mean, I think there are many examples of that. And sometimes, you know, being the underdog can help. In fact, I interviewed Dave Riding again earlier this year, and I was kind of talking to him about how he does particularly well on the second run charging. And he almost says when he's, you know, if he's not in the top eight, he doesn't feel that pressure in the second run and can really deliver much more.
Well, that's absolutely spot on. And I know exactly that feeling. Most of my best results actually were when I was not leading, or when I was not right up at the top. I completely know that. It's easier to be the chaser rather than to be chased. But, you know, if you're going to go all the way and you're going to be a real champion, you have to learn to deal with leading after that first run. Our boys, obviously, they're still young, but they've had their share of leading first runs and sort of having to deal with that. So I think they get better and better. Yeah, having said that, I mean, Zach, when he won his first medal in Korea, he was in 25th or whatever after that Super G because he had a big mistake. He was really disappointed. And I remember we went up to inspect the slalom run, and I said to him, Zach, this course suits you perfectly. You know, the conditions are going to chop up. You're going one of the first. It's everything's there to play with. And obviously, the proof is in the pudding. He came home with that first gold.
I mean, thinking about big events like that. So you went to Albertville, then Lillehammer, Nagano, and Salt Lake City. Did you have a favourite of those Olympic experiences?
Oh, I think they're all special in their own right. I mean, Olympics are incredible. Of course, there's no experience like an Olympic Games. To be honest, you know, there's so much hype on the Olympics, and it comes around once in every 4 years, and there are only three medalists. You know, for me, when the guys, the World Cup guys now, when they're coming top 10, top 15 in those Olympics, to me, that's like having a medal, because the chance on that one day that you're going to be able to put it all together is seriously tough. So for me, I'm a bit more interested in the World Cup, to be honest, because I think that is where, when you watch Dave, well, Billy and Laurie, but particularly Dave this last season, he was just insanely good, just so consistent and so consistently up there with the best. And I think that's pretty special.
For sure. I'll put a link into the show notes so listeners can have a listen to my interview with Dave. I have to ask you a question about Salt Lake in 2002. Now, I've spoken about this on the podcast before with Leslie McKenna when she was on, and Chemi Yorcott when she was on. But I'm thinking you were probably, you know, with Alan Baxter when he won his bronze and had it taken away. What are your memories of that?
Oh, I mean, that was just something that sticks with you forever. And it was super tough. I mean, we were such a tight-knit team. I had trained with Alan since we were about six or seven as well. We'd been together for a long, long time. And I actually remember sitting there with Alan, and I knew he had taken he had this inhaler that he'd always taken. And we were sitting in the room just a couple of days before his bronze. And he said, I've lost it. I've got to go and buy another one. So he went off to the pharmacy and he came back with another one, but it was obviously not quite the same one. So he had the original one tested, I mean, it was gutting. None of us could believe it, to be honest.
I mean, it's kind of awful. I guess if listeners aren't familiar with that, I mean, Emma's basically explained it. But, you know, there's a list of prescribed items that you can't take. Alan bought exactly the same inhaler that he normally used in the States. It had a different set of ingredients, let's say. And unfortunately, he tested positive for something that he wasn't allowed to take. And they had that medal taken away. And, you know, that changed history. Fortunately, since then, yeah, Britain has won medals at the Olympics, but still nothing in the Alpine event.
I think, unfortunately, Alan was sort of, they wanted to really make a big deal of it, didn't they? Make sure that just didn't happen in ski racing again. It was trace amounts that were found in Alan's situation, and it wouldn't have made any difference. So it was a ridiculous case. It's absolutely gutting. And we all know that Alan won that bronze.
yeah, such a shame. Well, I mean, we know, and you know from your personal experience, that, you know, racing the circuit is tough. You got the logistics, you got to get from country to country. You mentioned Korea already. You're in Switzerland at the moment. You know, when the boys were young and, you know, you were skiing with them, you kind of alluded to it before, but did you always kind of sense that you and Phil, that they were going to turn out to be racers? Did they have a choice in it?
Oh, they've always got a choice, and we always ask them. I think we probably have this conversation every 6 months or so, just to make sure they're happy with what they're doing. Is there anything they want to change? Make sure they're happy with the situation. But when they were young, it was just fun. I mean, we had so much fun. We just skied. We didn't really train in gates. We just free skied. And we lived in Tien, which is up at 2,000 plus meters. So there was pretty much always snow. And we skied off-piste. We skied bumps. We skied through the trees. We just had a blast. And I think that freedom that the boys got by doing that when they were young is really helping them now with their ski racing. Because I think a lot of kids get pushed into ski racing too early, get pushed into skiing gates. And then they haven't quite got the skills that they need. And those skills, I'm not sure whether it's so easy to develop them later. So we kind of, that was the way we did it. We actually, like I said at the beginning of this chat, Ian, I don't think we really thought, right, we're going to go out there and try and create three top ski racers. Yeah, we loved skiing. They loved skiing. We loved all the other sports. We've done a lot of cross sports with them. I think sport is in the blood. So here we are.
Exactly. Well, you know, I'm really pleased to say the Ski Podcast is going to be supporting the Carrick Smith boys this winter. And, you know, we know from those conversations with Dave Riding, with Vicky Gosling and everyone in Alpine, that funding is a constant challenge. So my contribution isn't going to change the world, but hopefully it'll help a little bit. And the good news is that we're going to have a few updates from the boys during the winter. So let's have a listen to what they've been up to in the last month or so.
Hello, everyone. It's Zach Carrick-Smith here.
It's Freddie Carrick-Smith.
This is the first of our updates for the Ski Podcast this winter. We're both really looking forward to sharing our progress with you guys through the pre-season and through this 24-25 season. I'm going to pass you on to Freddie, and he's going to give you a rundown of what we've been up to.
Well, we meant to come to Sasfay, but the road was closed because of a landslide. So we went to Selvio for 3 days, which was incredible. Really good snow, so we're really happy with that. And then we came straight to Sasfay, and I'll pass you on to Zach for that one.
So far, Sasfay has been unbelievable. We've had five, actually, great days. One day, a little bit snowy, but that's what it's all about. And then two, three bluebird days, couldn't ask for much more. We're going on to our last 2 days of skiing now. So far, a pretty amazing camp. I'm going to pass you on to Freddie, and he's going to just tell you guys what we're doing after this, going into October and November.
We're leaving here in 2 days, and we're going to have a month's break, get our fitness levels up, and then we'll head to Sweden for 3 weeks, I think, which should be amazing because we've never been to Sweden yet, so we're all looking forward to that. And we'll kick off the season there.
Back to Zach. Also, looking into October, we might come back to Sasfay if the conditions are looking good. Maybe get a good week or so of training through October so we don't miss too much. You will hear more from us next month. And thank you for listening. And one last thing, Freddie, just wanted to say a massive,
massive thank you to the Ski Podcast for having us. We really appreciate it. Thanks so much.
Thank you so much for the Ski Podcast for their support. See you guys next month.
Hey everyone, it's Luke Carrick-Smith. So excited to be partnering with the Ski Podcast for the upcoming season. Had a great summer of training in Norway for a month, which was always incredible. Spent 6 weeks up there training, 4 weeks in Fana, and then we went over to Jyväs for another 2 weeks, which was also good. And then I spent a month training in New Zealand, which was great. Hell of a flight to get there and back, but had great training. They didn't have that much snow this year, but overall the training was great. It was rock solid most of the time. Very little snow, but still great. Towards the end, I had a bit of an injury, so I had to fly home 2 weeks early and have just had 3 weeks off training. But now I'm back in Salzburg in Austria for pre-season training and trying to get this ankle back to a good level of fitness. I'm planning to be back on snow in about 10 days' time. I'm heading to Pier in Belgium, which is an indoor dome, which is injected. So great training for ice and get 10 days back on snow. In November, we're heading up to Sweden for 2 weeks, training in Kapdalis or Storklinten, which is great training and always injected. So getting used to the ice, getting used to the new winter snow and see how it goes. And if everything goes to plan, head over to Levi for the first Euro Cups, get a few races up there. Thank you so much for listening in. We'll keep you updated.
So that's brilliant, Emma. Thanks so much for spending your time today. I'll let you get back on the hill and let's see, what is it, 11:30 in SASFE? You're probably about to wrap up for the day, are you? Because you start really early, don't you? What time do you get on the mountain?
We get on the lift about 6:30. So we're pretty much wrapping up. I'm just looking across to see if the guys are done, actually. But yeah, we've had a good 10 runs or so. We normally try to get 8 to 12 runs in at this time of year. And as we get towards the season, it just gets a little bit less and less. But yeah, it's been a great few days up here. So Ian, thank you so much for your support. We really appreciate it.
If that's okay, I'd like to move on to Ben now. Ben, it's great to have you on the show. You are the founder of Ski Scandinavia. I really wanted to have you on the show because we've been doing a lot more coverage of Scandinavia, I guess particularly Norway in the last year. We featured a Trizzle in episode 209. And I just think there's increasing interest in Scandinavia in the UK market. Part of that is really because of, I don't know if you call it a hedge against climate change, but it does seem that snow is very reliable in Norway. Do you have thoughts on that at all?
Hi, Ian. Yes, I think what we find in Scandinavia is the stability of snow conditions. The reliability has been there for day dot. We've been operating for over 20 years, and snow is one thing that is an absolute given. So the snow season is very long. And very, very reliable.
And I think as well, this winter, there's a new direct weekly flight from Heathrow to Scandinavian Mountains Airport.
Exactly. So complementing our charters that operate sort of for half term and Easter weeks, SAS operates a flight from London Heathrow indeed to Scandinavian Mountains Airport. That actually starts on the 2nd of February and runs until the end of March. It's not the full season, but it's by far the majority of it.
For families who are thinking about half term, and in terms of the season itself, it's going to cover what, about 6 weeks, is that right?
It is about that, yeah. And obviously our charter supplements that to take it all the way through to Easter.
When Bex went to Trissel, and is that pronunciation correct, Tom?
The pronunciation is absolutely perfect.
Okay, when she went there, she flew into Scandinavian's Mountain Airport, and just saying the transfer was pretty short. But in terms of the resorts near there, and here's my next attempt at pronunciation, Hundfjället.
Not bad at all, Hundfjället.
Okay, Hundfjället. That might be the shortest transfer in the world because I think it's only 10 minutes. Is that right?
Well, we drove it in 9 minutes, and I have to add at the speed limit as well. So we 9 minutes. We've been searching around to try and find a shorter airport transfer for a ski resort, and we think there's one, but it's a private airport that only accepts very small aircraft. From a commercial perspective, I believe it's the world's shortest transfer.
I mean, you could, notionally fly into the Altiport in Courchevel and you could be at your hotel in less than that. Although, to be honest with you, most of the hotels are a bit further down into the village. So it would still take you more than 9 minutes. But okay, so it's very near. And Hundfjället, what kind of resort is it then? Who would that be suitable for?
You can generalize the Scandinavian resort sort of into one and sort of say that, and Hundfjället's no exception. It is pretty much for everybody. I think the terrain, the slopes, the accommodation, the resort as a whole lends itself really, really well to a very diverse, broad type of skier. It'll be remiss of me to say it would be superb for the extreme skier who's looking for off-piste. It's not that. But there is a range of slopes from green, blue, red, black, challenging, steep, challenging slopes for those that want them, but really good beginner areas for those as well. So I think if you're a family or if you're a group or if you're a couple where you want to experience a broad range of slopes, then it's perfect. But I think the absolute key is the snow. And it's probably, we've worked it out, what is the unique points of Scandinavia and Hundfjellet, especially the same? It is the friendliest place in the world to ski. The locals are so open to people from the UK and just love that because the majority of skiers are Scandinavian. So UK skiers are quite novel and they are really welcomed with open arms. Couple that with everybody speaks word perfect English. It makes all the difference.
So what kind of size is the ski area there?
So it's quite interesting with Sälen, and this is something quite important. So Hundfjellet is part of a larger ski area under one lift pass, which is, the SkiStar Sälen area. And it's in fact top 10 biggest ski areas for skier days in the world, as per the RM Ski Report. It's actually quite big. It's over 100 pistes. The lift system there is incredible. And the region, the wider region there is about 250 slopes, 167 lifts, and 226 kilometers of piste. It's actually quite big when you look at it in terms of scale. And Hundfjellet is part of that region. So you've got access to Tondedalen. So the Sälen ski area is linked. You've got Hundfjellet, Tondedalen, Lindvallen and Hörfjell Center, and it's all accessible on that one lift pass. So when you look at Hundfjellet in itself, it's a good size area added to a much broader area.
And those other resorts that you mentioned that are all included on that lift pass, they're all kind of grouped under Sälen or Sälen. What kind of distance are they apart? Would you need to have a car or they're like Navette buses that run between them?
So the area there is, it's four resorts, let's say. Hundfjellet, Tondedalen, Lindvallen and Hörfjell Center. Hundfjellet and Tondedalen are linked by ski lift, so that's very easy. And then to get around the mountain to get to Lindvallen and Hörfjell Center, it's a very short 10-minute bus ride, which is free, a regular bus service. I think they're actually electric buses that run between the all the destinations. So it's completely connected.
The airport itself is almost on the border between Norway and Sweden, right? So just on the other side of the border, you've got Hemsedal in Norway. And you mentioned you used to live there when you saw the snow in June. What's Hemsedal like?
That's right. So Hemsedal is stunning. It's very, very different terrain. It's known as the Scandinavian Alps. The terrain is very rugged. You've got a big mountain feel with lots of bigger mountains around you. So you really do feel like you're in the Alps. It's 3 hours by transfer. So the transfer is slightly longer from Oslo to get to Hemsedal, which means that for me personally, or as a business even, we recommend families with slightly older children who don't mind the longer journey. And it's a beautiful journey. The route is very scenic. It's absolutely stunning all the way along. Hemsedal has the highest pisted point in Scandinavia, which is at around 1,450 metres. And also the longest green run, which is 6 kilometres, that takes you from top to bottom. So that gives you that kind of accessibility. So when you're going on a ski holiday, you can actually, as a beginner, after a few days, you can get up to those peaks, to those tops, and have that whole alpine, total alpine experience, even though you may not be a hardened skier. And I think probably one of the huge plus points, if you're an advanced skier and you like your off-piste, then you have to go to Hemsedal. The off-piste is epic. I've skied the terrain and, 12 years living in the resort, I didn't get bored once of skiing in the mountains. It's 21 lifts, 52 slopes, And then you've got the most amazing off-piste as your playground. It's fantastic.
I like the idea of off-piste. It's a shorter vertical drop in Scandinavia, isn't it? I think you said the top point there was about 1,400. And what's it going down to?
There's a 600-metre vertical drop from the highest point to the to sort of down to the base area.
That's great, Ben. That's really interesting. And I think a lot of our listeners are going to be exploring either Norway or Sweden. And maybe we could have you back down the track to talk about some of the other resorts in Scandinavia as well.
That would be absolutely my pleasure, Ian. Many thanks.
I enjoy all feedback about the show. I'd like to know what you think, especially about our features. So please contact me on social at Ski Podcast or by email theskipodcast@gmail.com. AD on Spotify said, great pod, Ian. Thanks for keeping this going over the summer when most other ski-related podcasts stop. Roll on the autumn. Well, we're in the autumn now, so hopefully now you're getting excited about the winter. Camilla sent me an email saying, you're brilliant at drawing people out with great questions, creating really enjoyable podcasts. Thank you, Camilla. And Mark Wakeling on Instagram said, I really enjoyed the Chemi Alcott interview. That was episode 220. From an early age, she just wouldn't take no for an answer. Her infectious enthusiasm is inspiring. I agree with you there. And also, I was really excited to be contacted by Jim Duncombe, co-founder of the podcast with me 7 years ago. He said, I was listening to a podcast the other day while hiking up a mountain. You were talking about where to get secondhand skis. At the beginning of the season, a lot of resorts organise braderie, where the local shops pull X hire or last season's kit to sell in one convenient place. Another great option is shops like Truck Sport, which sell secondhand skis on behalf of individuals. And there are loads of small shops like this. And I'll put links into the show notes. And always good to hear from you, Jim. Now, there are now 226 episodes of the Ski Podcast to catch up with. And 121 of those were listened to in the last week. You can do that too. There's so much to listen to in our previous episodes. Just go to skipodcast.com, search around the tags and categories, and you're bound to find something of interest. In the last week, 60% of our listeners were in the UK, 11% were in the States, and everyone else was spread as far and wide as Turkey, Greenland, and Mexico. Now, if you like the podcast, there are three things you can do to help. Follow us. Just look for that button now and press it. Give us a review or leave us a comment on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. And book your ski hire with Intersport Rent using the code SKIPODCAST or take the link in the show notes. Now you can follow me at Skipedia and the podcast at the Ski Podcast. I'd like to thank my guests today, Emma and Ben.
Thank you very much, Ian.
Thank you, Ian. Thanks very much.
And finally, listener, thank you for joining us wherever in the world you're listening right now. And until next time, goodbye.